This is Edge Cases, a podcast about mostly Apple-related software development, featuring myself and my co-host, the Bert and Ernie of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French, whatever my name is.
Today is Saturday, January 19th, 2013, and what's our topic, whoever you are?
Whoever I am? I think I'm Ernie. Although I kind of mean, maybe I'm Bert.
Good to be Bert, yeah.
Anyway, the topic is Flatter and Compliment.
Okay. And Flatter without the E.
Oh, so this is a little foreshadowing. You actually know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. A little bit. I've heard them talk about it on some of the 5x5 episodes.
Okay.
So, yes. Do you have any follow-up before we get started?
I do, yes. So, again, continuing on with the foreshadowing theme, I mentioned a little bit of this about on my own Twitter account. That I use task paper to put together the show notes. I also use it as a to-do list system. Partially, OmniFocus is our my main tool for that. And actually, even more foreshadowing. It's like recursive foreshadowing that I know we're talking about you getting into GTD a little bit, but
yes,
but that's recursive enough for me. Let's pop a stack. And I mentioned how I. You know, of course, in the early days, Syracuse would have, kind of refer to follow-up as FU. And yes. So Chad Sellers wrote into us to give some clarification to a previous episode. And so in my little task paper, I said, FU, Chad Sellers, to remind myself to, go into the Gmail note and kind of distill what he was talking about so I could put in there. And I looked at that thing, 10 times, keep on wondering why I was saying, F you, Chad Sellers, F you. So
that's true.
So I had to finally change it to Chad Sellers follow-up. But that's a little inside baseball thing so now the people at home can play along.
Well, yeah, and I have been sort of telling myself that I should remember to call our follow-up FU ever so often, just as, a little homage. But
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess it used to be like the blog father when you have someone encouraged you to you looked at them and you said, I'm going to have a blog because this guy has a cool blog. So do we refer to Syracuse as the pod father?
I'm sure he'd appreciate that.
I don't know if it goes to him or Dan Benjamin, but anyway. But again, there's obviously Core Intuition was I think predates both those. So yeah. So I don't know whose father is it anyway. We don't even know.
It's a unknown parentage. But in my case, it's definitely the Hypercritical podcast is my what I think of as the podcast where I said, hey, I can do that.
Because he does it so poorly. You're like, hey, anyone can do that. No, Syracuse. I know you listen to this. Sorry. We love you.
We love you.
Love you. So back to Chad Sellers. Chad Sellers, I've blogged about before. He has this app called Paranote, which I am a huge fan of. Paranote is this really awesome app. And, it should be doing sponsors because he should be paying me to praise his app so much here.
Should.
So Paranote is really cool because it's basically a text edit window where you type along as you're taking notes, but it also can record audio and video as you're typing and does this really weird thing where it's as you are typing, it's taking timestamps of each character as they're being inputted. So what you can do is as someone's talking, you can take notes. And then later on when you want to listen to the notes, you can basically click on a character on a word and we'll jump to that part of audio.
The audio, right.
As this is I'm a horrendous note taker throughout all my education. I used to try to take good notes, and I just gave up on it because I'd never go back to them. And really, Paranote was the first app that allowed me to effectively go back to my previous notes. And I conferences I've been to, 3 years ago, I'll still open up my Paranote file, but I have to jump right to that one thing. So it makes it it's a way to index audio, which is very effective. So. Big thumbs up on Paranote. And it used to be just for the Mac, but he ported it to iOS. So, it's gotten to the point where, on these meetings, I can just, bring my iPhone with me and record it and, kind of tap out, small little notes. And that works out really well, too. So, it's really a great app. And so, big thumbs up. But anyway.
So, thanks, Chad, for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, we'll send you the invoice, right?
Well, and just before we leave the topic, just to say, we had said, Syracuse had a blog, excuse me, had a podcast that we listened to, but now he has a new one, right? He has Neutral,
right?
If you heard about this.
I started listening to the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, if the one thing, the only, besides sports, probably the only thing you could have a topic for a podcast by people I like that I would not listen to it would be talking about cars. So I'm not sure I'm ever going to listen to it. I'll wait till they get through this miniseries, and maybe they'll get a new one after that that has like stuff I want to hear people talk about. But in case you are looking for more of your Syracuse fix, you can go look at that.
Wow, it never struck me that you're not a car guy, because I'm totally a car guy. Okay. Anyway, so back to the Chad Sellers thread. He wrote in with two clarifications, and I was trying to distill this down, but he did such a great job of writing it up. I'm just going to basically read from his email here. So the first one has to do with the BSD personalities I was talking about in a previous episode. And he says, note, while the Mac OS X kernel called XNU does contain code from Mach, it is not used as a microkernel the way it is in Mach. BSD is not a layer on top of Mach, rather is a sibling alongside it. There's even a third sibling in the kernel, IOKit. I believe you know this, but the episode of Times made it sound like you're saying OS X had a Mach kernel with a BSD layer on top of it, and that which is not the case. See also Amit Singh's Mac OS X internals book for more information, or better yet, a blog post that even preceded the book. And he gives a link there, which I'll put in the show notes, which he talks about that. And so, yes, if I made it sound like Mac OS X, I don't know if I should still put the Mac in there since Apple's calling it OS X. But if I made it sound like that...
Oh, go on.
Add the Mac. You say I should drop it?
Add it. No, no.
Oh, add it. Oh, okay. I thought you'd go with the old Mac thing, because you're curmudgeonly like I am. So if I made it sound like there's a BSD layer on top of Mach, yes, I'm sorry. I'm glad that Chad had wrote up with this with the clarification. And the other clarification is about capability-based security, which, again, I'll quote from him. What distinguishes capability models from other models is the capability models focus on communicable security tokens that can be passed around. So software is granted access not by looking at what it is, such as a security label or path name, but rather by what it has, which is the security token. So that is actually a big difference. I mean, you look at look at your standard binaries. Like you have sudo, right? And sudo has the setuid bit on it that allows it to jump to root. And that's would be a security label you apply to a binary. Where with these capability-based security mechanisms, you would actually pass some sort of like root token, communicable token, to the sudo process so that it could then do the type of things that you'd want it to do. So it seems like a fine difference there, but it actually makes a big difference in practice. Okay. Any follow-up for you, Andrew?
No.
Okay, then we can probably just jump right into the topic, which makes – so you already gave yourself away a little bit. It sounds like you've actually already heard of Flutter, but I will run through kind of the elevator pitch for Flutter anyway for those people, which I presume is probably a majority of our audience who hasn't heard of it. So Flutter is – you can go to Flutter, which is FLATTR.com. So it does not have that E, and so that's when you can – you can tell it's a old style trendy company when it ends in an R like Flickr.
People don't do that anymore.
I don't think they do that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why, but anyway.
Well, they found them. They found the E's.
The great vowel shortage of the late 2009s. Or,
that's it. Yes. Yeah.
So Flutter is it's a flat rate social micropayments service. So let me break that down for you. The idea is that you give Flutter a certain amount of money each month. So in, I think their minimum is like €2 a month. And euros because they're Swedish. At least I think they're Swedish. They mentioned something about, like, they quoted Swedish stuff in their in little intro video there. So I'm assuming they're Swedish. And so the idea is that you give them, you know, €2 a month flat rate. And then as you go around the web and you find interesting projects or interesting sites or blogs or photos or what have you, is that you can quote-unquote flatter them, which is it's a little bit confusing here because I'm using both flatter as a noun to describe the organization and also a verb to describe the act of giving one of these micro-donations. So, but, you know, try to follow along. So you flatter basically a URL, although you can also have physical things you flatter, although I don't see too much of that. And So the idea is that you flatter everything and everyone and everything. So let's go around passing out these flatters. And it's flat rate in that you never go beyond that €2 a month or whatever you've set your payment rate to. Instead, what Flatter does is that at the end of the month, it looks at everything you flattered, and it takes those €2 and it divides them up. So if you flatter 100 things and it divides up into 100 chunks of the €2, so I guess that'd be 2 cents. €0.02, I don't even know what €0.02 are. This is how international I am. And then they get the 2 cents to everyone you flattered. So obviously, so the kind of the pathological case is that if you only flatter one person, one thing a month, then they get the full €2, which is actually a pretty tidy little sum from one person as a flatterer. So, and Flatter also has this ability to have connections. So basically you create an account with them and you say, yeah, this Twitter ID, this GitHub ID, this Facebook ID, this Flickr ID, this 500px ID, whatever. There's a bunch of different services, SoundCloud, like all these, they're actually my Flatter ID. So so then as people flatter things on these different services, it all kind of funnels into your account. It's a way of you establishing ownership essentially over URLs. Is that even if it's a website that you don't control, you still can kind of establish ownership there. And I do know they do this like in a synchronous thing where like you can flatter something that no one has claimed ownership on it yet. And I've done that a bunch of times because Flatter as a service isn't that popular yet, but I'm hoping it will eventually become more and more popular. And that's partially what I'm here to talk about tonight. So it's I've been using Flatter for about... I started putting money in probably about 10 months ago or something like that. I've been trying to use it more and more, but not too many things are flatterable, really. So it's kind of like in this case, I'm kind of pushing out a thread that I'd like more things to be flatterable. But unfortunately, it's not too many things are. There's a good number, and I'm trying to do what I can. so that's one thing. So I'm trying to make it a little bit more popular. And so I wrote an app that I call Compliment. And you can find Compliment at compliment.wrench.com. And the way I pitch it is I'm kind of hoping that it does for Flatter what Twitterific did for Twitter. And yes, I actually did consider actually calling it Flatterific. But that sounds so bad. And I know from personal experience that I can still not spell Twitterific. Like, I always have to Google it first to find how many R's or F's are in there. Yeah. So I decided that Compliment is a nice kind of Mac OS X name type stuff.
Yes.
So another point of problem with the name is that actually there's two compliments. There's Compliment with an I and there's Compliment with an E.
I was just thinking that.
I would suspect you would. So Compliment with an I... I mean, if you look in the dictionary, it actually means like to flatter, to praise, for an accolade type thing.
Right.
But compliment with an E is an accompaniment or companion. And part of the problem with naming this app Compliment is that it actually fulfills both I and E versions of this because it does try to be a compliment to other Mac apps. So we'll just kind of just ignore the with an E version of Compliment, and let's say that it's another way to say flatter.
Well, nobody can spell the second one, so I'm glad you went with the first one.
Yeah, right. So Christian Keeney, so how this all got started off is Christian Keeney. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, but he has this really nice app called Core Data Editor. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that app.
Oh, no, I haven't.
It essentially allows you to, given a .mom file or .exe data model file, allows you to open up like SQL3 database and kind of work with core data based information, would be an XML or binary plist or SQLite form at a higher level. So it's if you can use something like base.app if you have like a SQLite file you want to peer into that was created or managed by Core Data. But Core Data Editor actually takes the model and infuses it with more metadata and actually you're kind of like working with the managed objects at that point. So it's nice and high level. And I know Core Data Editor actually integrates MoGenerator into it for generation purposes. And so Christian is a big fan of MoGenerator, and he sent me a tweet about a month back that he said, you should add a flag to MoGenerator that it sends you X number of dollars every time it's executed automatically via PayPal. So I thought that was a nice idea that as a donationware. Then I realized he didn't mention it explicitly, but that's actually exactly kind of what Flatter would enable, is the idea that like every time you generated something with MoGenerator, that it could actually do a Flatter request to the MoGenerator project. And so what Compliment is a Mac app, small Mac app, that provides that service to other Mac apps, that basically provides a bridge between Mac apps and tools and allows you to automatically Flatter them. So I want to talk...
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes, so I want to talk a little bit about how this is implemented. So at a technical level, if you look at something like MoGenerator, it's something that really you want to kind of have like a fire and forget type thing, because you don't want it to like talk to Flatter directly. And where it's like, hey, you know, I'm being invoked. I don't want to do a slow HTTP connection that might take potentially 10 seconds or even longer to come back with a response. So
right, I've got MoGenerator set to run every time I build.
Right, right. You want something that's super fast, that's kind of fire and forget type stuff. So the idea is that Compliment is that what happens is that the next version of MoGenerator will send out a distributed notification saying, hey, it basically sends out a Compliment request. And it includes the project URL, which in this case it would be github.com/wrench/MoGenerator. And so that's kind of the canonical URL to represent the project. And I've claimed ownership via the Flatter connections to everything under github.com/wrench. And so this app listens for those notifications and then queues them up and then asynchronously asks Flatter to Flatter them. And this actually kind of runs into a surprisingly kind of sad part of sandboxing. There's this class called Distributed Notification Center, and that's what allows you to do distributed notifications, and is totally a great fit for this use case, which is the fire and forget. So MoGenerator, you launch it, and it does blast out a distributed notification that includes the name, in this case MoGenerator, and the URL, in this case GitHub wrench MoGenerator, and then that it might include some other metadata like what's the path to the binary that's being executed, and the icon if there is one, so it can show up in Compliment all nice and shiny. But it turns out that sandbox apps, while they still can send out distributed notifications, they can't include user infos. And this strikes me as a very weird kind of sandboxing limitation. I'm not quite sure. I can understand them cutting off distributed notifications altogether, because it is essentially another communication channel that I suppose maybe malware could use to talk to each other, or I don't know. And so a sandbox app can't set the user info. When you're sending a distributed notification, if you set the user info to anything but nil, it won't do anything. It will be a no op, and you'll see a message in the console saying, "Hey, you tried to do this. I'm not going to let you." The other limitation that's documented and then distributed notification. The other thing that isn't documented, at least in that class's page on the Apple's developer site, is that you can't. Sandbox apps can no longer listen to all distributed notifications. Kevin Ballett wrote this really handy app called Notification Watcher that allows you to look at for both workspace notifications and distributed notifications. It's quite eye-opening to launch it and run it, because you never think that every time you pull down a menu or when you switch an app, there are distributed notifications and workspace notifications being sent. And so it's very eye-opening to see like Time Machine send notifications and all these other apps. Like iTunes, whenever it tracks switches, it will send all distributed notification. That's how a lot of these apps keep track of what track you're currently listening to. So you can't listen to all distributed notifications. So there's actually a project out there that has a very similar use case to what Compliment wants to do. And Compliment is essentially it's almost like a system service in that it wants to provide the service to all comers. And another project that's very similar in scope is Growl. And Graal used to, yes, Graal used to use distributed objects for this. So it would you'd find the Graal process and you send it a distributed object notification. A DO. A DO is different from distributed notifications. It's more direct. And so, I was intrigued. I know that Graal went to some serious pains when the Mac App Store came out, when the sandboxing came out. And so I kind of dug into that a little bit. And what I found was quite horrifying, that and how they had to implement things. And are you aware of how they had to implement such a thing, Andrew?
I don't know how they got around it, no.
Oh, it's so sad. So it's so bad that they had, and I'm not, let me be very clear on this, I'm not faulting the Graal project at all. This is basically the only way they could move forward, is that they rolled their own custom TCP server that listens locally only, and then they advertised it via Bonjour.
Oh, man.
Yes. So for one...
Well, that sounds like growling pains.
God. Yes. You gave me growling pains just listening to that bad pen.
Just listening to that, yes.
So it strikes me as this terrible thing that in the name security, it sounds like that Apple really wants, if you want to provide a service, a Graal style service, we all have to write our own TCP servers that that advertise via Bonjour. Right? This seems like such a step backwards.
Shoot me now.
But, and so I actually complained.
Or like, you know, set up like a, like, can't you do something like iCloud or something? Could you do that? I mean, no, that wouldn't give you the same capability. You still there?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how iCloud would fit into that.
Well, I mean, it's a way to convey information, but forget I mentioned it.
Okay. Well, let's cut that out in post.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I complained about this on Twitter, and I got a couple of the sandboxing guys at Apple kind of feeding me different alternatives for what I can use. And there's actually a lot of potential avenues here, including XPC over Mach, that would be really great. That actually would be a slam dunk if I didn't want to do what I'm doing, which is, you know, a service to all comers. And it's one thing if you're like writing an app and then you're writing like a daemon or a login item or a launch agent that needs to communicate to each other. There's like new sandboxing stuff in 10.8, I think it's 10.8, it might have been back in 10.7 even, that allows like, they're basically like security groups where applications from like the same developer can communicate with each other directly. And so that's promising, except that I don't know ahead of time who these other developers will be who want to send me messages. So,
And that's what they kind of want to avoid. They want to avoid strangers talking to each other.
Right, right. So, Mark Munns had a interesting workaround to the user info problem. The basic problem here is that you have this, you want to send out this compliment request, and the question is, who requested it? And so there are three techniques here. Number one, you could encode the information into the distributed notification name itself. So it could be compliment request dash, and then maybe some sort of binary plist or something in there, or that's a plist in there. That's like, URL wants to be requested, app name, blah, blah, blah. So put in some sort of like URL encoder or something into the distributed notification name itself. The problem with that, The problem with that is, as I mentioned before, is that I really, really want to kind of like compliment to be sandboxable, even though it currently isn't. And as I mentioned, you can't listen to all distributed notifications, so you'd need to know ahead of time that name of the distributed notification. And if you're encoding arguments into the distributed notification name itself, that's not going to work. So Mark Munns had this really interesting workaround where you can use a custom pasteboard. And the idea is that you create a new named private pasteboard, you put the information into that pasteboard, and then you send the distributed notification. And then the, in this case, compliment would know to go look at that private pasteboard and pull the information out. And that's actually a pretty pretty nice little workaround. It's, Gelcut called it like pasteboard RPC.
Well, it's like it's a shared memory scheme.
Right.
Yeah. It's weird, though. I would think that they would, if they really wanted to, they could kill that. They, you know, they might reject applications that did that, for example.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It was an interesting little chink in the armor there. And finally, which is what I end up settling on, which is not nearly as bad as the rest, is that when you send a notification, whether it be distributed local, so that you have this little object thing, and this object parameter. And like in a normal app, it's like I'm sending a notification and I'm sending it about this object. So if you like, so for example, core data, you can say, hey, manage object context did save, and it's about this manage object context. So you can subscribe to notifications for all saved events for manage object context, but then you can pass in, say, I'm only really interested in this one manage object context. So it's a way of filtering that. And distributed notifications also have this object parameter. It's a little bit different that in distributed notifications, it has to be a string. And that kind of makes sense because behind the scenes, they're serializing stuff, throwing over mock to distd, which is the distributed notification server. And so that makes sense that it wouldn't just be a full-fledged NS object. It does need to be written over the wire. And so, using Kevin Ballard's notification watcher, I noticed that this object parameter is used in a pretty different way. Like it's like when your computer locks a screen, like the object will be, for me it was 501, which is my user ID, my Unix user ID. So apparently it sends out a notification saying, "Hey, the screen was locked, and this is the user that caused the screen to lock." A lot of apps seem to set it to null, but this seemed like the perfect little channel for me to turn into a string. So I take the plist that I want to send over the wire, the poor man's user info, as it were. I take the dictionary, I call description on it to turn it into a string, and then I send along with the distributed notification. And it turns out that even if you're a sandboxed app, that there's no problem picking up that information out of that object parameter. So all I have to do is then deserialize the plist, enter the dictionary, I'm good to go. Yeah. Yes. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of the fun stuff. Do so.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
A little sneaky.
Yeah. I have to imagine that this would actually, this would not get you rejected. I could see the pasteboard thing doing it, but object is explicitly allowed. And I have to imagine that they did the code review there. I still don't know the reason behind why they don't allow user info, apparently they were not worried about object, as it were.
Yeah.
So speaking of Mac app store type stuff, I should also talk about kind of the politics of like paid apps and using Flutter and all that. So the number one that there've always been has been a dust up between Apple and Flutter. There's a popular podcasting. Some people call them podcatchers. I don't know if I'm down with that, but I'll just call it a podcast listening app called Instacast. That's available on iOS.
Right.
And Flutter is one of the use cases they explicitly call out in their little web intro video is the idea that podcasters wouldn't actually have to be totally reliant on sponsors or rich uncle daddies to fund their podcasting ways, that the idea that listeners themselves could flatter podcasts they listen to, which I think would be a total slam dunk. And apparently so did the author of Instacast. So he made it so there's a way to somehow advertise yourself, or I'm not quite sure how it works, but you can make it so podcasts can be automatically flattered as you listen to them. It's just the client has to support it. So Instacast added this feature. I forget what version it was, maybe Instacast 3 or something like that. It might have been before that. It might have been Instacast 2.x, something like that. And Apple eventually rejected the app. I think I don't think they ever shipped with it, or maybe they rejected it after it shipped for a while. But anyway, it's verboten. And the entire idea is that this is a payment mechanism that is not part of Apple's 30% cut.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not something that Apple will allow, which is, to me, this is, I mean, Flatter is currently not that popular. I hope it will get more popular. But it's, to me, I think one of the reasons why I have a kind of soft spot in my heart for Flatter is that before Flatter came out, I had this idea that it wouldn't be nice if you could pay your ISP an extra $10 a month or whatever and have it somehow distribute the funds to all the URLs you visit. Of course, that leaves all sorts of problems. Now we know the NSA is watching all URLs go by, but of course, your ISP is too. But there's all sorts of problems. Like, can you trust them to do the distribution? Like in terms of my hierarchy of who I'm going to trust with money distribution, my cable modem provider is very low on that list. I have the soft spot in my heart of Flatter. I really think this idea of kind of like a distributed payment system could really change the dynamics of how the internet works, how people are compensated. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about Flatter. I'm trying to support them. And for Apple to kind of like bring in their old school idea of, we're the channel here, and this is our troll world, and you cannot do anything else. To me, that's like holding back humanity. That's holding back progress. This is a new promising mechanism for a new way of kind of providing payments, and Apple just kind of put the kibosh on it just because it doesn't fit in their old school model. So, and unfortunately, they have the power to do that. So because of what I've learned with the iOS App Store, I'm pretty sure that compliment could never be on the Mac App Store. So this will always have to be a little third-party channel app that will never be able to get through the Mac App Store. So that will probably limit its distribution. But the worst case scenario is that no one installs it, and these distributed notifications get fired that no one listens to. So it's pretty even the worst case, not so bad. And one thing I wanted to mention is that it's when you think about the use case of how the Flatters are used in today's apps, I already mentioned the mode generator case, which you could be, if you have it hooked up like you do, Andrew, where it's like, it sounds like you actually hooked it up to actually your build script.
There's a script that gets called as in one of the stages of the build. Yeah.
Okay. So basically every time you build, you're firing off mode generator.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
is not ideal actually, but.
Mode generator is pretty fast, so that's not such a bad problem.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I would still, it would be better if Xmode, we were able to hint.
Yes, actually worked.
Xmode for Xcode 4,
yeah.
Such that it would just do it for you exactly when you need it.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, for now, it does the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obviously mode generator, you talked about it firing off in the build script every time you build. You definitely want that to be super fast. So sending out a distributed notification is also super fast and asynchronous and it's slam dunk.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But think about longer term lived apps. Like if you have a hex editor or a markdown editor or something, like when should that fire? It's like every time you open a document or every time you launch the app or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the kind of the assuming that every time you launch the app, or maybe even whenever you open a document, the way that Flatter is structured is that you can Flatter the same thing multiple times, but only the first one will take for each cycle. So in this case, like all the other requests for Flattering, for compliments, are pretty much ignored. I mean, they'll be logged and they'll be tried, but they'll just show up as, oh yeah, sorry, you've already flattered this thing. So in the mode generator case, it would result in extra HTTP traffic, but that's about it. And I'm even thinking of putting like a throttling mechanism into compliment app itself. So that way it doesn't have to, it will just know that it should even try because it will just come back with a, sorry, already flattered. There's some, like, I'm a little bit worried about like aligning your calendar with their calendar. That's a kind of a thorny issue, and that's the only reason why it's not in the current version. But yeah, so and that's it. That goes through all my list again. It's compliment.wrench.com. It's a free app, and I hope everyone tries it and integrates with it. It's, I mean, all you need to do is send a distributed notification, and it's pretty easy to do that.
A distributed notification with the information that the Compliment app can then use to send the information to Flutter, correct?
Right. Yeah. And it's basically the URL that you're claiming. Oh, I should also mention that one of the angles that I'm trying with this is that, for example, I have this app called Markdown Live. And so it's a free app, but it's a purpose-built Markdown editor. And it makes sense that as you launch the app, it asks for a Flutter request via Compliment. However, Markdown Live relies on the discount library, which I forget who wrote it, but I'll include a link in the show notes to it. And so discount is a C library that implements Markdown parsing. So given Markdown string, it'll give you an HTML string. So that's what Markdown Live relies on to do the generation of HTML from your Markdown source. Uh-huh. And so one of the things is that the author of discount right now isn't getting any compensation for his pretty awesome library. A feature of Compliment is the ability to not only request Compliment for Markdown Live, in this case, the host app, but also all the subprojects that allowed you to build up to Markdown Live. So in this case, it also asks for a Flutter of discount, and it includes a field saying via Markdown Live. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of a way that all these like really awesome GitHub projects that contribute source, things like Sparkle and AF networking, and these types of really awesome little projects that have a ton of contribution. This is actually a way there's only so many developers. I mean, obviously we overflow dub each year now, but there's only tens of thousands of developers of iOS and Mac developers, but there's hundreds of millions in. There's hundreds of thousands or millions of users for the Mac stuff, for Mac apps. So the idea is that when you go to use this free app, and you're not only directly flattering the developer of the app, but also all the projects that he thought was important,
right,
for also building this app, which I think is a pretty cool idea, and I hope that this will gain some traction.
Well, it's the idea that the users will need to then also install the Compliment application.
Yeah.
Or that some of these apps might actually bundle the Compliment application with themselves for the sake of getting its functionality.
I was hoping that users would install the Compliment app.
Okay. Because I would think that you would be better off, I think, in terms of wide scale adoption, in having a library that someone could integrate into their app.
That's actually really interesting because basically that's the same thing with Graal, right? That they have this framework that mm-hmm. you link to that it will put up a notification if Graal is installed. If you use Graal, if it is installed, if not, they will just kind of display it for you. So yeah, that's actually a good idea. I hadn't thought of. So good idea.
And let's just get this out of the way. So your hope is that soon, eventually, Flattery will get you everywhere.
Exactly. Okay. You just put that so you could put in the show title, right?
I pretty much did, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there's also I'm going to try to find it. There was actually a neat series of tweets for a while about someone who said they wanted to call a new movie series with like Jonathan Flattery, just so they could have that as like their title. Flattery, this summary, Flattery will get you everywhere.
Nice.
I thought that was funny. It's like a year or two ago. I'm not going to be able to find it, but whatever. And the other thing I was thinking was that in terms of Flattery sort of being able to park funds for you,
right,
even when you're not with them yet. Now, isn't that quite similar to one of the competitors of Marco Arment's?
Right. Wasn't that Readability? And did they catch a lot of flack for that?
They caught a lot of flack for saving money for people who were really unlikely to ever sign up for it. And it sounds like this is kind of the same thing for now.
I'm not sure about Readability's model in that it. I don't know if it was flat rate, but if it was, then it is similar. But
It's a different amount of money, but it's the same thing. It's this idea that when you say, "Well, I want to donate to these guys," you don't know if they'll ever get the money.
Well, obviously, if they've, you know, if they've actually bothered to integrate Compliment into their app, it's
and they will,
right? Right. It's it. I can imagine they pretty much guaranteed to have that ownership already set up.
Right, and that makes sense. Like what you're doing is making it like right now. These developers, well, for one, they may not know about it. So hopefully, you know, our vast audience will now all be aware exactly. of this capability. But then the other thing, yeah, if you make it really easy for them to integrate it, then they're much more likely to have it. And this is also much more likely to. It seems like Flutter was primarily aimed at websites.
Right.
Whereas what you're doing is making it easier for actual apps to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's very, very Apple developer of you, for mm-hmm. one. And yeah, I think that's, like, it's much more likely to get, you know, our crowd, our people more involved,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like that's your intention. So, yeah. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. So that's it.
That's it for me. Again, it's compliment.wrench.com.
Sure. And obviously that'll be in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find us individually on Twitter, myself, A Pontius, APONTIOUS, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench. That's the word rent, RENT plus Z plus SCH. And you can find us on the web at edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. Getting a little mixed up here, but there you go. So we'll see you next time.